Welcome to Whiskey Cast, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 432 for July 6th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
I'm very canny. I won't do anything. That's why I pulled back a few years ago. I thought, no, I'm not gonna do anything that risks, you know, my life limb and the financial stability of my family.
Duncan Taylor, Chairman Ewan Shand, has been wanting to build a distillery in his hometown of Huntley for many years now, but put those plans on hold when the economy crashed several years ago. Now preliminary work has begun at the site, and it's just part of what Ewan calls the biggest year ever for the 75-year-old company. More with Ewan Shand later on WhiskeyCast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, your voice, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department, all on this week's WhiskeyCast.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's get started with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Of course, we'll hear more from Ewan on the new distillery later, but just a quick note first. Site preparation work began this week, and there's still a question over whether Duncan Taylor will be allowed to knock down and rebuild the existing 114-year-old building on the site, or whether local planning officials will insist that the original building be renovated. Depending on what's decided, the new distillery could be up and running in about 18 months. A quick look at the business side of whiskey for a moment now. Diageo completed its deal for control of India's United Spirits this week, even though Diageo only wound up owning about 25% of the company. That's because Vijay Mallya's UB Group has pledged to vote its shares with Diageo for the next 5 years, or until Diageo can get 50% ownership. Some of the UB Group's shares that were supposed to be sold to Diageo are tied up as collateral for loans to Mallya's troubled Kingfisher Airlines, and the creditors wouldn't release those shares. The deal gives Diageo a stake in the Indian liquor market, but it also means some uncertainty for Scotland's White & Mackay. The United Spirits unit has been the subject of a lot of speculation since British regulators are reported to be concerned about Diageo acquiring even more control of grain whiskey distilleries in Scotland. Diageo will get control of White & Mackay's Invergordon distillery near Inverness and already owns all of Cameron Bridge and a 50% stake in the North British grain distillery, both near Edinburgh. Diageo executives have not commented on the future for White & Mackay this week. Edrington owns the other 50% stake in North British and released its annual financial report this week. The company had a 13% increase in pre-tax profits, with growth coming in emerging markets. However, the company took a hit in Southern Europe on sagging sales of Brugal rum in the region. Meanwhile, Isle of Arran Distillers reported a 39% increase in profits with its best year on record. Managing Director Ewan Mitchell cites increased sales in the U.S. and Denmark and expects continued growth in Asia and South America during the coming year. Now, did Arran do a deal with the devil to achieve these results? I'm being facetious, of course, but Arran also released the second series in its Devil's Punch Bowl series this week. It's called Angels and Devils and follows last year's release of the original Devil's Punch Bowl, which is named after one of the geographic features on the island. Angels and Devils uses the oldest Arran peated malts available, which were distilled back in 2004, along with malts from some sherry hogsheads. 6,660 bottles will be available worldwide. A quick update now on the story I've been reporting for the last couple of weeks on the flooding in southern Alberta. Highwood Distillers in the flooded town of High River has been closed since the flooding. Late this week, police started allowing some of the town's residents to check on the damage to their homes. Those residents include a lot of the distillery's staff, and they're focused on their own homes much more than the distillery right now. Our thoughts are with them. I'll keep you posted as we get more information from High River. You'll find the latest whiskey news all week long at WhiskeyCast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Help us select the next Glenmorangie single malt whiskey with the Glenmorangie Caskmasters project. Sign up online through the Glenmorangie Facebook page or on glenmorangie.com.
Just a heads up now, The latest episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings will be on the web later this week, and I want to welcome a new sponsor for the show. 40 Creek Canadian Whiskey has joined us to bring you WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings every month, and I hope you'll join me in thanking John Hall and his entire team for their support. By the way, I'll be at the 40 Creek Distillery in Grimsby, Ontario, the final weekend in September for the annual 40 Creek Whiskey Weekend. I'll be taking part in a panel discussion on Canadian whiskeys with Davin DeCurgamo, Joanne McGinnis, and John Hall, and we'll be doing that weekend's episode of WhiskeyCast from 40 Creek. WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings is available on iTunes and at WhiskeyCast.com, along with other podcast sites, too. Also, the latest WhiskeyCast HD episode is now online, with a look at one of the key questions for cocktail lovers: shaken or stirred. Bobby Gleason of Beam Global and Louisville area bartenders Levi Beckley and Larry Rice show us why there really is a difference between shaking and stirring. On that note, there's a new section now at WhiskeyCast.com featuring cocktail recipes from some of the world's leading bartenders. Of course, you'll find it in the pub section. And if you have a favorite recipe, feel free to share it with us. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker. Had an interesting question from Scott Rogers on our Facebook page this week. Here's what he had to say. With NSA leaker Edward Snowden still marooned in Russia, it got me wondering, is there any interesting or uncommon whiskey available at the duty-free in Moscow? Well, that's a good question, Scott. I've not been to Moscow, so I don't have an answer. But I'm sure one of you out there may have been through that airport. Let us know about the duty-free selection in Moscow. Now, last weekend, I decided to have a little bit of fun and asked our Facebook and Twitter followers to work the word whiskey into a quote from Star Wars or any other movie quote. We had dozens of responses, and I will not inflict any of that silliness on you here. But if you really want to see them, you can find them on our Facebook page. Finally, don't believe everything you read on the internet. We've heard that phrase for years, but I saw more proof this week of why it is still very relevant. A website called BoldSky.com ran a piece this week billed as Top 10 Most Expensive Bourbons to Try. Now, if you follow me on Twitter at WhiskeyCast, you've already seen my comments on what may well be the Locke Do of whiskey writing. According to this article, and you're not going to believe this, Middleton Very Rare and the Macallan are bourbons. The Pappy Van Winkle family business dates back several hundred years, and there are very few bottles of the, quote, Jack Daniel's Macallan Fine and Rare collection, unquote, left. I'd say there are probably zero bottles of that one in existence. Those are just a few of the many, many mistakes in this story, which appears to have been inspired by a piece Maxim magazine ran on its website earlier this year, and actually was cited on some mainstream websites, complete with mistakes. Now, if this were television, you could see me shaking my head right now. If you have something you'd like to share with other whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com or on our Facebook page, and you can also email me. My address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. And the comments of the week are brought to you by Johnny Walker. Time now for the calendar of events, brought to you as always by Laphroaig. David Blackmore will lead a Glenmorangie Cask Masters tasting at the Brandy Library in New York City this Tuesday night, the 9th. And there's also a Scotch Spirit School at the library that night, too. The Good Spirits Company in Glasgow will have a bourbon tasting on July 12th. Whiskey Spirits in Frankfurt, Germany will have a whiskey and chocolate tasting the same night. Tales of the Cocktail will be in New Orleans from the 17th through the 21st. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's U.S. chapter will hold a tasting in Chicago at Drum Bar on July 17th, and the U.K. chapter will have what's being called a James Bond whiskey tasting on the 18th. And blogger Alwyn Gwilt, also known as Miss Whiskey, is putting together a charity afternoon tea, whiskey, and jazz event at London's Opium Bar on July 21st to benefit Marie Curie Cancer Care. You'll find links for all of these events and more than 250 whiskey events around the world at WhiskeyCast.com. Just look in the pub for the calendar. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at Laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
Whiskey Cast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Barry Crockett, master distiller, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
I think that where celebration of a special event is concerned, you can't really surpass Redbreast in terms of the single pot still style. And certainly for any, say, special family occasion or when people call to the house, people would normally maybe expect something a little bit better. And in that case, I would present a Redbreast.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
Back to our top story of the week now. Duncan Taylor has started work on a new distillery in the Aberdeenshire town of Huntly. It's been Ewan Shand's dream for several years now, and he's fulfilling another dream or two as well. Ewan and I talked for this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth.
Well, the new distillery is an old distillery, really, because the what we've got is the original plans, and we're now developing them. We pulled back after the sort of financial crisis of 2008-2009 and decided that maybe it just wasn't the right time, and now is the right time.
And you were having issues with wildlife, too, on the site, is that
right? Yeah, we did have the bat problem. I noticed that somebody had reported, it was actually in Denmark. I was talking to a few journalists from Denmark, and the guy jokingly said, I heard it was bats that held the thing up the last time. And I said, well, temporarily it was, but it didn't hold it up for 3 years.
There were voles, too, as I remember you telling me a while back,
There's been a bit of everything in that place. The voles, yeah, that was the most interesting part because they had to have a vole inspector come in, and the vole inspector discovered footprints on the earth, on the little stream, the Thanesburn stream that runs through the site. The guy found little footprints. Can you imagine finding a vole's footprints? The thing must weigh about a millionth of an ounce, but... the guy found footprints, so that, of course, caused a problem as well.
I can't imagine being a vole inspector.
Oh, what a great job, eh? Well, it's 24 hours. What they do is they come down and they're on site for 24 hours and they watch the movement of the bats and they watch the movement of the voles, and it's a brilliant job. Good whiskey sitting there and just watching the wildlife, you know,
Whiskey, you'd see almost anything out there.
Absolutely.
If you drink enough.
Absolutely. After a few drams, you'll be, you know, the voles will be elephants.
So let's talk about distilling. How's progress coming so far? And when do you hope to actually be ready to go?
Well, we started this week. We had to get the splays. The splays are the opening, at the entrance to the premises. We had to widen it to get equipment in. So... we've got a bulldozer on site and a digger on site at the moment getting the splays all widened and opened up. We'd tar the road, asphalt the road, the entry road, so we're doing that at the moment. And the next stage will be the building. We've got two thoughts here. The building's really old. It goes back to 1899, so we can't decide whether we're going to tear it down and rebuild it, or shore it up and get it into a fit state to hold the equipment. So we're talking to the planners at the moment, and they don't want us to knock it down, but we're keen to really demolish it and rebuild it exactly the same as it was, with the same granite stone and as the original 1899 building. So that's the only thing the only stumbling block at the moment, but it's purely a stumbling block and who's right and who's wrong. What's the best way to do it?
But that's a stumbling block that could theoretically derail this for a while.
We've been in talks for ages, and they're of the view that they'd like to see it retained, but you know, we're not. We think that it would be far better to put up a blockwork building and then just put the granite blocks round about it, retaining everything the same. But you know, by doing this, it'll last for hundreds of years, as opposed to it's already been up for 100 and something years and needs tidied up. So I think in the end of the day, we would prefer to see a rebuild, and it's actually quicker, believe it or not, if we went for a rebuild. to actually shore the building up and take it down, rebuild it stone by stone, and everything else is quite time consuming and pretty damned expensive. So we prefer to go down our route. But we'll see what happens. We're in talks with them at the moment. We've got planning permission, so I mean it's only it's not as though anything's going to change. It's just purely a decision that's got to be made.
Are you starting to get excited?
I'm not. You know, I'm long in the tooth now. I never really get excited too much about anything anymore. It's just I'm keen to get the thing going. I'd like to see this build. I'd like to see it certainly built within the next year to year and a half. I mean, that's the aim. Equipment's always difficult. We're also looking at the equipment side. I can't go into too much detail there, but equipment at the moment, because there's so many distillery builds all over the place, and certainly in Scotland. I just heard today that there was something like 6 or 7 new distilleries being built or in the throes of being built. I don't know whether they're all going to sell their product, but well, let them build it, see what happens. But we're canny when it comes to these things. We're watching how we do things. Watch every penny. We're going to build it within our means. There's going to be nothing, no stupidity at all here. It's we're here to stay, and we want to make sure that what we're producing is going to be sold in hundreds of years' time, long after I'm gone.
So you're raising the question, where are all these guys going to sell their product? Where are you going to sell yours?
Well, you've got to remember that the company's been around for 75 years, and we've got established business throughout the world. And, we've now opened our new import business in the States, and touch wood, put a wood here, we're doing extremely well. The company's had a record year. In fact, this year alone has been our best year since the beginning of the company. We've just had a fantastic year. We've got a fantastic team of people in the company now, and we can see that we're establishing new distribution here, there, and everywhere, and people are recognizing Duncan Taylor as being a quality business and quality products, and they're looking at longevity, and so are we. So things are good. Things are good, and we know that we've got outlets, and we know that if we can keep those outlets and keep coming up with good products, then we'll retain them.
And a lot of the success has been due to Black Bull, right?
Black Bull's been tremendous. I mean, we're doing great things with it. It's a fantastic. Fantastic range of whiskies, and it's an exciting range. We're bringing out new extensions to the range all the time, and we tweak it as well. We'll have different batches. We have different batches, and we've got excitement out there. It's our customers like it, and it's growing rapidly. So, I'm very excited about the future.
Now, the brand itself celebrates an anniversary next year, I believe.
Yeah.
I heard that you're going to be doing something special for that already, right?
Well, the big special will be Le Mans. If we can get Le Mans, the only stumbling block might be that in France, of course, you cannot use alcohol in motorsport or in fact, any sport. But we'll be there somehow or another, and we'll hopefully the Curacao and the Black Bull brand will be together at Le Mans. I'm not sure what we're going to put in the car, but the spirit of the brand will be there.
So let's talk about the deal with the Curacao. You have gotten into motor racing, sponsoring them in a European Le Mans Series competition.
Yeah.
But you've got this little snafu about a little problem in not being able to market it in France with alcohol.
Yeah, well, there is this regulations in France that alcohol and sport do not go together. Now, there's the famous brand Bruichladdich managed to overcome that at Le Mans in previous years. I think they put on the car, it was in the first year maybe Bruichladdich, and I think it was Ladi in the second year, the Ladi. I can't remember exactly. Don't quote me on it, but I'm quoted now. But anyway, we'll do something the same. You know, we'll stick a bull's head on it or something like that. I'm not sure exactly how we'll do it, but as long as we're there and as long as we've got the team there as well, our whole you know, the whole idea is to get a team at Le Mans. I've been going there for 20 years, over 20 years to the race, and I love it. It's a fantastic race, and that's been one objective. One you know, thing I've always wished for is a distillery, and the second is to be at Le Mans with a team. So hopefully we're gonna get two things in 1 year. So it's gonna be a big year for us next year.
And you partnered with Ikuria Kos, which to racing fans is a name with a lot of significance in sports car racing.
Well, it's absolutely huge. I mean, every major racing car driver has been through Ikuria Kos. If you look at everybody from Jim Clark, Jackie Stewart, David Coulthard, Alan McNish, you know, who won Le Mans this year, everybody's been through Ikuria Kos. It's got a history beyond belief. Fantastic team, great guys that are involved in it now, and we are really, really happy to be linked to them and as key sponsors of the team. So yeah, it's exciting times.
Let's talk about your move out to California, because you set up a shop in the Pasadena area as well, right?
Yeah, what we did was we were going to set up a sort of outlet for Duncan Taylor, like a liquor store, but because we are producers, it couldn't be done. But we needed office space because we've got an import business. We've set up our own import here, and this is our focal point for the whole of the U.S. So we're based in South Pasadena, which is just 5 minutes outside Los Angeles, and we've got a team here of seven people, and all very knowledgeable on the whiskey business and Scotch whiskey. The sales team is headed by Peter Curry, who everybody knows. Peter, brilliant guy, really knows his stuff, and you know, he's well respected in the industry. So Pete handles that. And the rest of the team, I've got my son who handles logistics. We've joined the designer, a new guy, Danny, who's handling Mexico, South America. And then my wife, who's CEO, she's been very instrumental in really the success of the company over the last year. She's a tough cookie, but she gets the job done. And I've been very appreciative of what she's done and done in the business for us. And we've got a finance here as well, so we're running a lot from the U.S. It's been the U.S. is a market that we're very much focused on, to be quite honest. It's we like it. People like single malts. They're knowledgeable and they want to know as much as they can about it. And it's still quite early days here. I mean, there's a lot of people don't know about single malts and single grains, especially single grain. And it is the home of Black Bull too. Originally, Black Bull kicked off here, and everybody sort of knows. It's just one of these names that they know in the background. You know, they've got this subconscious, I know Black Bull, I've seen it before on the shelf. And we've reestablished it in the U.S., and so this is going to be a major market for us with Black Bull.
So when you were in Scotland last week, did anybody recognize you with the Southern California tan, I assume you picked up?
There was a few comments about spending too much time in the golf course, I must admit. But, you know, I tend to sit outside when I'm doing business here. You can't do that in Scotland.
Well, the other question, obviously, is that you got into the furniture business a little bit too, didn't you?
Well, yeah. I'll tell you how that came about. We'd just thousands of casks sitting doing nothing. And those casks originally were being kept for the distillery, but because that slowed down, the casks were beginning to get, you know, spent and couldn't be used again. So we thought, the fantastic oak casks, and some of them are, you know, going back to the 50s and the 60s, and we thought, right, we're going to turn those into furniture. So I approached a couple of furniture makers, a guy, Morris Geddes, who's in the town of Huntly, and Kenny Donaldson, who's across in the West Coast, and we said, look, guys, what can you come up with? And they came up with some great ideas. And So we took a patent on what they come up with, so that nobody would sort of pinch your ideas, or if they did, we'd have to take action. My wife being a lawyer, of course. And we've come up with the furniture. It's pretty new. We're just getting it out there at the moment. We're about to do a pretty big launch on it, let people see what we've got. And it's recycling. And in fact, we've also the Scottish Green Awards. I think we're in the short list of winners of that. I hope we win it. But anyway, the furniture thing is exciting for us as well. I've always liked to recycle stuff. I hate throwing things. I'm typically Scottish. I hate chucking anything out. And what they say is, where there's muck, there's brass, you know. So
tell me what kind of furniture you came out with.
Well, we came up with tables. We came up with chairs. We came up with sort of cupboards and dining room dining cabinets and... You name it, we've done it. And, you know, if anybody wants to come to our shop in South Pasadena and see you, that would be great. And also in Huntley, we're about to make some changes there. We're opening a new bottling plant in October. So we bought the old supermarket, which actually wasn't an old supermarket. It's only about 20 years old, but it's a huge building in Huntley that's been closed for a couple of years because there's so many damn supermarkets in Huntley. The building became vacant. I bought it at the beginning of this year, and it's now being converted as we speak into a pucker new bottling plant and a tourist area. So we'll also have a shop, and we'll have the furniture in the shop there too. So. You know, this has been a lot of changes. I mean, in the history of Duncan Tail, the 75 years of Duncan Tail, I think this year would be the biggest change of all.
Is it fair to say this is pretty much making you almost Huntley's biggest employer now? Or the grocery store still outpace you a little bit?
Being shortbread, there's a couple of oil companies in Huntley. It's a town of 4,000 people, but I suppose we would. Yeah, once we get the distillery and the bottling plant up and running, yeah, we'll probably be one of the biggest employers.
What do you think your father would say right now with you getting ready to do the distillery? Because I know he was in the whiskey business for years.
He's probably
years.
Looking down at me just now, thinking I'm daft. He was a canny sort of guy, and he's not a guy that, you know, he would love to see it. He would love to. I mean, especially the distillery side. He was wedded to distilling. You know, oh, sorry, mother. But he was. He spent, you know, most of his life at the distillery. He knew distilling from back to front, and I think that's where, you know, I learned it from him. I used to follow him up and down to the distillery, and, you know, that's where I got this whole passion for the thing. And I think he'd be very happy.
Which distillery did he work at again? I'm trying to
he
remember.
Was at Glendronach.
Glendronach?
Yeah.
It was Glendronach, yeah.
Yeah.
That came to mind, but I wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah, that's what he went through all the stuff at Glendronach, and you know, he knew the trade. He knew the trade well.
And he probably would have been the first to tell you, don't buy or build a distillery, right?
That's exactly right. Absolutely. He was a canny guy, and you know, to go and spend millions building a distillery, I would think he would balk at that.
Although I'm sure there would have been some pride saying, well, Ewan's in a position to be able to invest millions.
Well, that's
or
right.
Be able to put together,
I mean, well, one thing you will be happy about is that I'm very canny. I won't do anything. That's why I pulled back a few years ago. I thought, no, I'm not gonna do anything that risks, you know, my life limb and you know, the financial stability of my family. So and I do tend to do everything myself. I don't like to have, you know, lots of investors and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, occasionally it's good. But, no, I like to paddle my own canoe. So, and that's what I've done with the distillery. That's what I'm doing now. I waited until my resources were such that I could go back into it again, and that's what I've done.
And you've got the two boys in the process now,
right?
Two
boys, yeah. Andrew's handling the Black Bull side, and Gordon, he's on the logistics and operations, both doing well. These guys are chip off the old block, maybe. I don't know. They're working hard and determined to get everything moving forward. And, of course, hopefully I'll retire in a couple of years and leave it to them to sort it.
Well, you won't retire too soon.
I'll never retire. I'll be here till the day I die. I'll be, you know, smothered in whiskey somewhere or another. Or motor racing.
So why not sponsor a U.S. racing team?
Hey, if I had the money, I might. But, you know, you've got to remember that Écurie Écosse are in the Le Mans, the Petit Le Mans. So we never know. We could get them. They might race in the States as well. But that's expensive. That's when you're talking. You've got to remember that it costs money to race. And, you know, there's a certain limit that I'll go to. It's got to be
a whiskey affordable. And racing are the two things where you make a small fortune by starting with a big fortune.
Starting with a big fortune, that's exactly right. So, yeah, I always bear that in mind. But it's good for the brand as well. I mean, it's letting people see Black Bull out there. People who wouldn't have seen it before. It's on the car. It's on TV. It's, I mean, the guys at Écurie Écosse are winning the GT category at the moment. European and UK, so they're on everything. If you look at Google or look at any of the car magazines, you'll see photographs of the BMW Z4 absolutely everywhere. So we're getting amazing exposure.
Of course, you'll find links for Black Bull and Duncan Taylor at the WhiskeyCast website. And if you'd like to see a picture of the Black Bull Écurie Écosse BMW, there's a story on the team in the news updates section. And that's this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with a new release from a now-closed distillery, Douglas of Drumlanrig's Imperial 17-year-old single cask. It was distilled in October of 1995 and bottled earlier this year at 46% ABV. My sample had a light and fruity nose with pears and peaches, good maltiness, and hints of pine and mint. The taste is fruity at first with a touch of cinnamon and ginger spice that builds up quickly. Notes of peach and pear in the background. There's also a good consistency from the nose with malt, pine, and mint notes. The finish is medium length with pears and a soft hint of cinnamon. And I'm scoring the Douglas of Drumlanrig Imperial 17-year-old an 86. I also tasted a sample of the Douglas Lang Director's Cut bottling of a Highland Park 27-year-old cask from 1984. It was bottled at 50.7% ABV, and the nose is aromatic with cedar, honey, pipe tobacco, vanilla, and peach pie notes. The taste is thick and spicy with black pepper, honey, toffee, cedar, and touches of caramel candy and wood smoke. The finish is long and rich with wood smoke, honey, toasted oak, wet heather, and a hint of iodine. It's a very complex dram, and I'm scoring the Douglas Lang Director's Cut Series Highland Park 27-year-old single malt a 93. Finally, earlier this week, I was ready to post the 1,000th tasting note at WhiskeyCast.com and went through my sample table to find something special that I might have missed. Well, I found one. Samarole's bottling of a Glengarry cask from 1971. It was a sherry cask sample that I brought back from Whiskey Live Paris last fall and had set aside to taste later on. Well, the nose is amazingly rich and complex with notes of burning wood and tire smoke, meat on a hot grill, and espresso beans in a grinder. The taste, intense flavors of espresso and macchiato coffee, toffee, mild peatiness, and heather, and baked apples, peaches, and berries come alive as the coffee and peat notes fade. The finish is long with subtle peat and touches of mango and pineapples on the grill. It's just an amazing whiskey, and I'm scoring the Samarole 1971 Glengarry a 97. As I mentioned, that was the 1,000th whiskey to be added to the tasting notes at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the calendar of events, our news updates, and the Your Voice page, along with much more. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Whiskey Cast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.